more of Lake Effect on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. If you're not familiar with writer Tim Dowling, he's someone to look up. Dowling has written a very funny column for Britain's Guardian newspaper for the better part of a decade, chronicling his domestic life as a stay-at-home husband.
Dowling is American-born, but has lived in the UK for a quarter century. And in this age where we can all read anything written anywhere, his column has fans on both sides of the Atlantic, which is why his book, How to Be a Husband, just came out in the U.S. this last week. Tim Dowling joins us by phone from the UK. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Now, one of your most recent columns was on the agony of waiting to get a radio interview over with. So before we get started, I feel as though I should give you the option to back out now.
You're not the first person to bring that up to me. That was a terrible tactical mistake. It's you know what? Actually, you know, nobody enjoys talking about himself more than I do. But it's those little strange moments where you're sitting all alone waiting for the phone to ring. Where they're just very dark. It's a very dark little time.
Well, it's kind of tricky for us too, because we have no idea what you are doing in the time leading up to an interview.
I know. That's a mercy, isn't it?
Was it anything interesting in this case?
No, in this case, I am trying to figure out where to put the D in with the H in Jodhpur. For a crossword puzzle, and I'm not confident. My instinct is to put it after the D, but I think it doesn't help me with the vertical. So
I would think Jodhpur is one of those words that you have to know much better when you move to the UK.
Yeah, it comes up more often, but I don't actually own any. But I think my wife might.
Let me start with this question. Is it at all exhausting to basically be living life on the record?
When I started doing it, it wasn't, you know, I really didn't consider it to be, considering the fact that everything was going out into the public arena, to be that big a deal. Because if you're a freelance writer, you tend not to go outside that often. And the public arena means very little to me in that sense. But now that I've been doing it for sort of almost 8 years, I suddenly realized what a sort of monster I've made, I think.
And do you feel like you sometimes have to turn off the spigot?
Yeah, I mean, there, you know, plenty of things happen in my week that I feel no obligation to write about, and never will. And I hold back probably more than it looks like, in a way. But it is strange to basically, it's like a sort of letter home that lots and lots of people read. So you go places and people know more about you than you really remember, even, you know.
Well, and it must be strange. I mean, for a writer, it is one thing to have your work criticized, but with a column like yours and with a book like this, you are in this weird zone where you have people out there essentially reviewing your skill at marriage or parenting.
Yeah. It does kind of sometimes make people a bit judgy, and you think, you know, I don't know what to say to those people, except that, you know, they seem to think like I've accidentally revealed something awful about myself through my work. And all I can say to them is every word I put in there, at least I did it on purpose. You know, I knew what I was saying.
Right.
But, yeah, it's funny. It's that sort of whole facility that allows people to comment about your work instantly tends to bring out the worst in people on this sort of subject, because I think there are a lot of people who don't like that idea of a column, you know, existing.
Well, and but, it, know, right, exactly.
Sometimes I don't either, but I need to.
Well, despite having how-to in the title of this book, this is really part memoir and part how-to guide. Would the Tim Dowling of 20 or 25 years ago have wanted to read this advice?
I don't know. Would he pick this book off the shelf? God, I think it would be the husband that scared him more than the how-to. But it is not a how-to book. I must reassure any 20-somethings out there, this is not a self-help book in any sense of the word. Someone described it as a self-hinder book.
Well, and there is quite a bit of paisley on the cover, which leads one to believe that that it might be the women that are pulling this off the shelf anyhow.
That's true. I have to say, it's the only time in my life I've ever actually chosen wallpaper. They sent me a mock-up of it, and I said, I love it. I'm not sure about the wallpaper. And they said, okay, we'll change it. I've never done that at home.
I was just going to say, there's something to be said for choosing wallpaper that goes on the cover of a book versus wallpaper that actually goes on a wall someplace.
On a wall, yeah. That's not my area of expertise.
Well, for people who aren't necessarily familiar with your work, how did you get to be the go-to person for describing marriage, or at least your marriage, to the world?
Yeah, well, it came about by a sort of almost accident. I took over the sort of weekly column that John Ronson used to do, actually, in The Guardian. And the only thing they said to me at that point, they said, the editor said, don't feel the need to write about your own life. And I felt like that was a sort of instruction, which was like, don't write about yourself. And I struggled to find topics that weren't, you know, to do with my domestic life every week. And I sort of ran out of steam by, you know, I started in October and ran out of steam by Christmas. And I was just panicking and writing about my life sort of week in, week out. And every week felt like a failure. And then one day I managed to write something that had nothing to do with my life. And I was very, very pleased with it. And I fired it off. And I instantly got an email back from the editor that said, what happened to the funny wife? We like the funny wife. And I painted myself into a corner in a way. That's what I ended up doing. I ended up writing about sort of domestic existence week in, week out.
And we should say you get to do this because you work from home and you're essentially the what we would call in this country the house husband or stay at home husband, if that's right.
Yeah, shut in is the word my wife uses for it. There's a big difference between a house husband and a shut. It's, you know, being afraid to go outside is not the same thing. Yeah, I'm here observing, which I guess is strange. Like, I guess a lot of men don't observe a lot of the minutiae of daytime life in a house. More and more these days, I guess.
And you write about, I mean, this is one aspect to yourself that you describe. You are not what people refer to as an alpha male. And in fact, you write that the whole alpha male thing is kind of nonsense anyway.
Yeah, I don't really believe in it. I mean, somebody rang me up. It happens more than you think. This perennial notion of alpha males and beta males comes up. And if you're a journalist, you tend to get these phone calls where people just ring you up out of the blue and say, do you think you're an alpha male or a beta male? And I always say the same thing. I always say I come somewhere around lambda. And then there's always this terrible silence at the other end because they don't know what I'm talking about. And I once agreed to go on the radio about it. And I suddenly, the first time I'd ever had any done any thinking about this whole concept, and I just realized it's absolute nonsense from beginning to end. There's no such thing as an alpha male. What we mean by alpha male also is what people used to call type A people. This is people who are going to have heart attacks.
Well,
that's true. That's not me.
To some degree, you know, they're what a lot of people also refer to as many of them as jerks.
For jerk. People keep updating the alpha male thing so that it doesn't just sound like a total jerk. So there's often like you read things like 10 attributes of an alpha male, and recently you get things like sharing creeps in there and stuff. And like, that's not an alpha male.
I think the ultimate description of alpha male, and I can't remember who described it. It might have been me who described it this way, and I'm quoting myself, but as a person who talks loudly into his cell phone berating people at the airport.
Exactly. Clearly for effect.
Right, exactly. So as we said, there is the story of your marriage, and then there are the lessons you might impart to your readers. When did it occur to you that you actually had lessons to impart?
It occurred to me because someone said, you know, you should really write a book called How to Be a Man, and I they sent me an email, and I sent them an email straight back, so I don't know anything about that. And it sort of dawned on me that husband was one of those sort of titles you can't really take away from me. You know, I have all the paperwork and stuff. And as many things as I've failed at, masculinity-wise, over the years, I have been married for 22 years, and people look at a 22-year marriage and they think that there's some kind of trick to it, you know. I suddenly thought, well, at least I can explain how I got here and maybe show people that there is no trick to it. Because if I can do it, there can't be.
Well, and some of the lessons might be a surprise to some people, like, for example, the power of being wrong as a good way to wrap up. Maybe it's the sport of arguing with your spouse.
Yeah, I think men have this kind of men do sort of spar when they argue with each other, and men never like to be put in this position where they're wrong. You know, and so you get this real idea that when a man sense victory in an an argument, particularly a moral victory in an argument. He sees it and then suddenly realizes this was the worst tactical mistake he's ever made. A relationship counselor I rang up for some article once told me, I was trying to get him to give me tips on how to argue more effectively. And he said, look, do you want to be right or do you want to have sex tonight? This is, you know, a moral victory is something you celebrate all by yourself. On the couch sometimes.
You're right. You also write about your aptitude, and maybe I'll put that in air quotes, for DIY projects and your suggestions for projects to master. But before I ask you about those, I am curious about what the DIY culture is like in the UK versus, you know, what it's like in the US. Because, you know, if you're a man in this country and you spend any time watching TV, you would be led to believe there is something wrong with you if you are not putting up drywall at any given moment that you have free. Is DIY really as rooted in the culture in the UK?
No. And certainly not as in the TV culture. It's one of the things I miss about the United States is I love things like This Old House and somewhere in the sort of upper reaches of satellite TV in Britain, you can find Norm Abrams, the new Yankee Workshop, and I'll watch seven of those in a go, which infuriates my wife because obviously it's time I could be spending, you know, changing a light bulb. It's like here people watch cooking shows and they don't cook. I think it's that sort of thing. But I think when you're a householder, you just have this idea. You know, husband has that, as a word, carries that connotation of householder. And I do sort of take a certain perverse pride in doing it really badly.
That said, there are
my own hammer and stuff.
there are three key DIY projects that you say you have mastered relatively well.
I may be lying.
I could walk you through them. There was the
winch. You might have to. I'm a very good tiler, but I'm not sure if I admitted that.
No, but you talk about the power of being able to change one's windshield wipers anyway.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'd never done it before. And then clearly there was a problem. I couldn't see out the window. You know, the windows wipers, the windshield wipers were shot. And it's one of those things I always imagined that you had to know the exact part number and that it was specific to your car. And that maybe you'd have to take it somewhere and they would fit them for you. And I looked it up and there's like one size fits all and they clip on, clip off and they hardly cost anything. It takes 10 minutes and it changes your outlook completely.
I will say this is something that vexed me as well.
You could just take them off another car. It's that easy. Go out at night and take them off someone else's car.
Well, in Milwaukee, it would be especially easy because we are one of these cities where if there is a chance of snow, people leave their windshield wipers sticking straight up so they don't freeze to the windshield.
That is so clever. See, I've never thought of that.
Well, I am not from here, so when we moved here and I started seeing it, I was wondering what the heck was going on.
What is it with these people?
The other one, and I will concede that this my personal experience, I agree with you completely, is replacing a broken toilet handle, which looks on one hand like it ought to be rocket science.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's part of the whole sort of DIY thing for me is that you have to take that leap of taking the back off the toilet. And then once you look in there, it's actually pretty agreeably primitive. It's all sort of old-fashioned pulleys and levers and things. And you just find the bit that's obviously something went wrong. Something that used to be there is either fallen off or snapped, and you just have to figure out. I mean, the toilet next door is being held together with an E string off a guitar, but it works perfectly well.
It's from a guitar. I believe you also write about your hobby of banjo playing. Is that still something you do?
Oh yeah, I'm afraid so. Yeah, I play the banjo all the time. It just sort of sits next to my dad. I play my banjo when I should be doing almost anything else, including work. And it's incredibly loud banjo. I every once in a while I wake up in a sweat in the middle of the night and think, my neighbors hear every bit of that every day.
Because this will air in the week leading up to Valentine's Day, I do feel compelled to ask you about the key lesson you write about going out to eat for Valentine's, and that is not to do it.
Yeah, I say never go out on Valentine's Day. you're married. It's not really even a holiday for you. It's for, you know, you've got your anniversary now. And Valentine's Day is amateur night, and you're a professional. And my suggestion basically is to go out on the 13th. Book a table for the 13th, and you'll have a restaurant completely to yourself.
And you can pretend that it is a Valentine's, you know.
If you feel the need.
It's like the federal.
The thing about Valentine's Day is you're not allowed to forget it. Don't forget.
Well, and see, this is just it. Even though, as you say, it is not really a holiday for you if you are married, you're in trouble if you do forget.
Yeah.
Or the husband is, anyway.
Yeah, and I also think the other rule is that you should never buy something that looks as if it came from a gas station, even if it didn't come from a gas station. If they have them at gas stations, then you can't. It's not good enough.
So
someone suggested that you buy some gas, which I thought was a really good idea, because you think, what's the most expensive thing in a gas station? It's the gas.
But you would say those little air fresheners are definitely out.
Yeah, no. And I mean, there's a weird thing in England where you can buy an awful lot of, in the way of sort of chocolates and that sort of last-minute stuff at gas stations, especially around Valentine's Day. And so you go in there, and that is basically, you look around, these are the things you can't get.
You have three kids, is that right?
Three sons, yep.
So there is a good possibility that they are absorbing who you are as a dad and a husband. Does that give you pause?
Yes. I find it creepy, actually. The whole idea of people looking to me as a role model, I find, A, mildly amusing, and B, it's just like, stop looking at me. Stop watching me while I'm having a panic attack. This is not the stuff you're supposed to pay attention to. But they like nothing more than watching me go sort of have a meltdown, you know, when you pull up to a toll booth and you haven't got any money. they love watching me not handle things well. They find it very entertaining.
So in a way, they must be strangely proud of the stories you write about how they torment you in this book.
Yeah. I mean, I just have to think. Sometimes I just have to, you know, these incidents, you just have to stop the car and you have to say, this is not the take-home message from this incident. Don't be like me. But I think they are probably thrilled with those little scenes of one-upmanship that make their day. It would be unethical for me to include the bits where I discipline them, you know. It would be too cruel.
At least while they're still minors.
Yeah. Let them write a book.
Well, listen, Tim Dowling, I know your time is short, but I thank you so much. It's a terrific book.
Thank you very much.
Tim Dowling is a columnist for The Guardian newspaper. His new book is called How to Be a Husband, published by Blue Rider Press. You'll find a link to his column archive from WUWM.com. And that is Monday's edition of Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North, thanking you for being with us today. I hope you'll tune in again tomorrow and every weekday morning at 10 for Lake Effect on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee.
Keep listening. Just about an hour from now, it's all the latest news from NPR and WBUR in Boston on Here and Now. But right now, it is 11 o'clock, and stay tuned because Fresh Air is next.